We're going to do the whole 39th chapter today, but it's only 8 verses, but it's packed full. And again, this message is one of pride. That's the central component of this message. We have to always be aware of the battle that is taking place for our minds. Unless you are born again, unless you understand who the Lord Jesus is, how he has sent his Holy Spirit to live within us, and the fruits of that Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. And when we are letting the Spirit drive us and not the flesh, God then works through us and lets us see things. Satan, his arch enemy, who's been defeated at the cross but is not completely dead, is always going to try and influence us. And he was the first person that had sin in heaven that came into this earth when he was losing his status as the anointed cherub and became God's adversary, HaSatan, Satan. In doing so, he's been trying to influence God's people ever since. And we have to be aware that he will always try and do that to us. We have to be aware of it. That's what the really focus of this message is. We get to see how even Hezekiah, one of the greatest kings that has ever been in Israel, fell victim to it too. So let me read those 8 verses and then we'll go over them individually. At that time, in other words, after he was healed, remember now he got this terrible disease, then God says you're going to die. And he also had seen God protect Jerusalem, kill 185,000 Assyrian soldiers in the hills around Jerusalem in one night. So Hezekiah saw miraculous things take place. This is after that, not too long after that. At that time, Merodach Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he heard that he had been sick and was recovered. And Hezekiah was glad of them and showed them the house of his precious things, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious oil and all the house of his armor and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah showed them not. Then came Isaiah the prophet unto Hezekiah and said unto him, what said these men, and from whence came they unto thee? And Hezekiah said, oh, they're come from a far country unto me, even from Babylon. Then said he, what have they seen in thy house? And Hezekiah answered, all that is in my house have they seen. There's nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them. Then said Isaiah to Hezekiah, hear the word of Jehovah of hosts. Behold, the days are coming when all that is in thy house and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith Jehovah. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, whom thou shalt beget, they shall take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Then said Hezekiah unto Isaiah, good is the word of Jehovah which thou hast spoken. He said, moreover, for there shall be peace and truth in my days. Now, Hezekiah obviously made an enormous mistake letting these people come and see everything that he had in terms of his treasures. He was just coming off this massive illness that God said was going to kill him, and he saw these 185,000 Assyrian soldiers die in one night. I mean, these are fascinating prideful events that he let the pride of Satan come in to boost his self-worth. I did, I can, I have. It's an attitude that comes by Satan, through Satan, to each one of us, where he can try and take any victory that you have, any accomplishment, and turn it into pride. There's nothing wrong with seeing an accomplishment and being pleased with it. It's when you start getting puffed up about it. I did. You should see. Well, you know, everybody has heard these things. You know what I'm saying. Satan's always going to try and do it. It's harder for us to experience victories than it does defeats, because the victories are where Satan gets us. That's when we're doing good, we've accomplished something, we've done something, that the pride comes in. You have to be aware of the enemy always wanting to do this. He always will want to do this. Hezekiah was relieved and comforted by what God had done for him. He could see God's promises, so he was really puffed up here. You know, he could be thankful, which he was, but he let the pride come in. He let it go beyond thankfulness, beyond having a prolonged life. God gave him 15 more years. 15 more years. And he was going to live to be 54, which was beyond what most of the kings ever lived. So God blessed him richly. He was happy to share this good fortune with others. The news of his recovery had gotten to Babylon, and the people there were really interested in the fact that the sundial had moved backwards. And remember, we talked about that. He asked the Lord to do that, to move the sundial backwards on its steps. And the sundials that they're talking about at that time had little platform, two steps, two sets of steps, a vertical pole and then a horizontal pole on the top. And when the sun struck that pole at different spots in the sky, it would cast a shadow on the steps. Hezekiah asked him to move the shadow back. It didn't happen in other areas, but it happened in Jerusalem. And it was so fascinating that even the people in Babylon knew that this was happening. They wanted to come and verify these events that caused this spirit of pride to come in to Hezekiah. And again, Hezekiah was very, very happy that these things have happened, but he got overly happy. He got overly confident, and he let pride come in to replace that composure he should have had. Now, both in the deliverance of him and the interest that the people in Babylon had in astronomy brought them to Jerusalem. The Assyrian army had been decimated. Hezekiah had lost a lot of riches to Sennacherib. We're going to look at that in a few minutes. And he got presents, though, from the population. He got presents from his neighbors. He probably hid some of the treasures so that Sennacherib couldn't get them all. The text in 2 Chronicles 32 said, "Therefore there was wrath upon him and upon Judah and Jerusalem." The wrath that God is talking about was because of the pride that came in from these accomplishments. This is what led him to open up things he should never have opened up, things that belong to God, in the temple and these other areas that we're going to look at in some more detail here. The pride that he exhibited also went to the population. Populations in any organization will sense the leader's attitude, and they will develop that attitude. Well, that happened here. The population became prideful too. It's the same thing that happened in the reverse to his father, Ahaz. Ahaz was a despot and was an idolater, a sexually immoral man, and he set up these high places to worship these pagan deities and these sexually immoral temple prostitutes. The people did the same thing then. And it was, you remember what we had said earlier, that it was difficult to pull that out of the people once it got there. So while Hezekiah, his son, was a reformer and tried to do a lot to stop it, you can't pull that out of the population real fast. It takes generations. Well, they were very susceptible to the pride then that he had. So let's look at this section of scripture in detail here. The first verse says, at that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and was recovered. Starting in 728, the king of Assyria also held the title of the king of Babylon. I'm going to go into this in a little more detail near the end of our message today, but it's important to understand that the Mesopotamian region, which today is primarily Iraq, was run by the Assyrian Empire, and in the southeast part of that, which is southeast Iraq today, there was a city called Babylon. Now, Babylon was a magnificent place in its day. But at the time that this was taking place, they didn't have military and governmental control over Assyria. It was the other way around. Because at that time, they had city-states. So Babylon was its own state, if you will, not aligned with anybody else. But because of its attractive nature, the Assyrian kings also became known as the kings of Babylon. This guy here is also called Berodach, found in 2 Kings 20, verse 12. It's most likely Esarhaddon, the son of Sennacherib. It's uncertain, though, because the more you read about these different kings and their succession, you get it from archaeological excavations, the cuneiform tablets that are available and have been. It's hard to get the exact succession because several factors. One, the archaeologists are trying to piece together these things and to determine the age of the different cuneiform tablets is one thing. But because the kings had multiple names, they would have a particular given name, but then they would get a title when they became a king. And even then, they would change the name depending upon some military victories or the other governmental officials in obedience to these guys would want to honor them with the name of one of their gods, their phony gods. So these names are changing, and it's hard to get the exact chronology, and the more you look at it, the more confusing it gets. So we're not sure exactly who this man was, but I think the best estimate is he was the succeeding son of Sennacherib. Remember now, Sennacherib went back to Nineveh after the 185,000 were decimated, and he lived for a while, but he had three sons, and two of them murdered him. The third, Esarhaddon, took over. And there seems to be more than one name for these guys. You know, the Romans did the same thing. They would take somebody, and they would declare him a god and change their name. This is kind of what these people were doing here. The visit was best viewed, though, by these guys coming, these emissaries, as a political one with espionage interest in their hearts. They weren't coming there just to say, hi, we love you. They were looking for something. Sending letters, ambassadors did this on a regular basis in the Middle East, and they still do it today in these Eastern countries. And again, it's natural to think they really wanted to know about this sundial thing, because these guys were experts in astrology. The Babylonians have had a fascinating history. There are 8 chapters in the Bible that refer to Babylon, and it is a fascinating study. They were distinguished for their attention to astronomy. That was first developed by them. Astrology too, but astronomy first. They were seriously looking at the stars and the planets, trying to understand them. They had a superior knowledge of a lot of different sciences that came out of them. For nearly 2,000 years, they were the city in the Middle East. They were a commercial and financial center. They practiced and developed the arts of divination, astronomy, astrology, accounting, math, private and commercial law. All these things sprang up from Babylon. We're still using many of these things today. And a lot of the things that they did had a good basis in law and business. They had an understanding of mathematics long before the Greeks did. They understood squares, roots, cube roots, reciprocals, exponential functions, log functions. They knew the Pythagorean theorem before Pythagoras did in Greece. And that was a stumbling block for many builders and people that were surveying, because they were trying to figure out what is the third leg of a right triangle. And right triangle is a 90-degree triangle, and this is called the hypotenuse. They were trying to figure that out, and they did it long before Pythagoras did. They came up with what we call pi in mathematics, which is the formula for finding the area of a circle and the circumference of it. Without pi, you can't figure these things out. They had it. They had this stuff. It was incredible what they did. They were the first people to divide the day up into 24 hours, 60 minutes for each hour, 60 seconds. It's called the hexadecimal system, or base 60. We still use it today. They divided the year in 12 months and 30-day months into a 360-day year. And it was a couple hundred years later that finally somebody figured out that there's a little bit more in the year, so they added 5 1/4 days. But these guys were, incredibly brilliant. What happens, though, and again, you know, Hezekiah was probably thinking, wow, you know, the Babylonians want to come and see me. This is great, you know. So the second verse says, and Hezekiah was glad of them and showed them a house of his precious things, the silver and the gold, the spices and the precious oil, and all the house of his armor and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house, nor in all his dominion, that Hezekiah showed them not. I can tell you from a time I worked at the Detroit Edison Company, and I worked in the electric control centers, managing the power flows throughout the system and between different regions and whatnot, and assigning crews to fix outages and so on, that the chairman invited the Japanese to come in at a time when Japan was starting to enter in a big way the auto market and take business away from the auto companies. I thought it was foolish for them to do it. They brought these guys in, and there was about 10 of them, and they all had cameras that nonstop took pictures of every inch of that place. Every inch. That's what these guys were doing here. These guys were coming in to find out what was available for them should they decide to attack, what was available to them in terms of barriers, military prowess, and so on, that could hold them back. Pride goes before a fall. Proverbs 16:18. And it's something to keep in mind here. Now, he received them because he was so puffed up with his victories and the flattering that he felt about these people want to actually come and see me. Wow, this is great. Now, God is going to test Hezekiah about this. And it's not God testing Hezekiah for God to see what the outcome is. He knows everything, past, present, and future. He's testing Hezekiah so Hezekiah can see how he acts, how he reacts in this situation. When we take the prophets and we look back at the stories in the books of the Kings and the books of Chronicles, we get a more detailed description of what's taking place. So 2 Chronicles 32:31 says, "Howbeit, in the business of the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, who sent unto them to inquire of the wonder that was done in the land, God left him to try him, that he might know all that was in his heart." So the Lord sets up this situation so that Hezekiah can see how he reacted. How he reacted. Again, God knows everything. Don't ever think you're hiding from God, ever. Because you're in here thinking things and you're thinking, nobody knows what I'm thinking. God knows everything you're thinking. He knows it before you even think. He knows what you're going to do. And that's what he was doing here. He was testing Hezekiah. And Hezekiah, without any reserve, just opened up everything to them. Even the level of his armaments. He showed them everything, which is extremely foolish. But he did it. And the text moves on, and showed them the house of his precious things. Now, it's a Hebrew word for nakotha. And what it means is a spicery or a perfume house. There was a lot of things they had to use in worship or even just the luxurious powders and perfumes and ointments and so on. And as the head of state, they had a lot of this stuff. They'd pass it out even at gala events, you know, give the ladies all these powders and their perfumes and so on. And that's the first thing he shows them. Then the silver and the gold. He had a large quantity of temple ornaments and a considerable amount of this wealth was given to him for service in the temple. And God had given that to Solomon to build the temple with. Look at 2 Chronicles 32:27-28 says, "And Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor, and he provided him for treasures of silver, for gold, and for precious stones, and for spices, and for shields, and for all manner of goodly vessels. Storehouses also for the increase of grain and new wine and oil, and stalls for all manner of beasts and flocks and the folds." Now, one would think that the Sennacherib's demand before the 185,000 were killed to give me some money, give me some gold and silver that Hezekiah met, you would think with the volume that it was dissipated. But the text here says, "And Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent unto the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I've offended, return from me that thou which thou puttest on me, I will bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of Jehovah and in the treasures of the king's house. At that time did Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of Jehovah and from the pillars which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid and gave it to the king of Assyria. So he gave him a massive amount of stuff. And you would think that there wouldn't be anything left. But this just shows you the volume of stuff he had. He hid a lot of the treasure that was in his possession. He put it in underground vaults. Some of it's been found. There's a lot of things from the temple that have never been found, like the Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat. These things have never been found. They're gone and no one knows where they are. Some people think they're down in some cavern that Hezekiah had hid away. Some people think the Babylonians took them at a later invasion. Some people think they got carted off to Ethiopia. No one knows. No one knows. But Hezekiah did keep these things so that he had these riches. Now, what happens next is God sends Isaiah. The text doesn't say that in the beginning, but where Isaiah goes with this when he's asking Hezekiah questions is, thus saith Jehovah. So God sent him. Look at what verses 3 and 4 say. Then came Isaiah the prophet unto King Hezekiah and said unto them, what said these men? And from whence came they unto thee? Hezekiah said, hey, they are come from a far country unto me, even from Babylon. Then said he, what have they seen in thy house? And Hezekiah answered, well, all that is in my house have they seen. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them. So shortly after these ambassadors have been with the king, and he showed them everything, even, as I'd mentioned, his armaments, Hezekiah had a prideful spirit. And I have to emphasize that because you can see how the flattery, how somebody praising him, it can happen to everybody. And it's something we have to be on guard about. It was Satan's pride that caused him to fall. So he's the original prideful person. So Isaiah says to him, what did these guys say? And he's very skeptical about, he knew what they'd said, but he's trying to get this out of Hezekiah. And he wanted to know, what is their business here with us and with you as a king? How did they communicate with him? What did they request? And then he wanted to know, where'd they come from? Well, what country did they come from? Now, Isaiah didn't ask him these questions as the emissary from God, because he already knew what they were. He was trying to get Hezekiah to understand the state of his thinking. That's why God does this. God wants us to think like he does in all things that we do, to protect us. You can't cut the doctrines out of the Bible, the teachings out of the Bible, without having problems come into your life. And people do this. Well, I don't like that section. I don't want to do this. I'm not going to do that. Okay. When you start eliminating parts of the Bible that you're willing to accept, you are opening yourself up to potential problems. Anyway, here is Isaiah asking him, what do these guys want, and where'd they come from? And what does Hezekiah say? He answers the question first. He doesn't answer what did they want, what did they say. He's starting to realize, uh-oh, what did I do? Well, he says they're from Babylon, you know. They are come from a far country unto me, even from Babylon. So he's starting to realize, because he's getting questioned. You know, have you ever, as a child, had your mother say, "What were you doing?" All of a sudden, "Uh-oh, I probably shouldn't have done that." This is the realization, this epiphany that he's having here. His heart was lifted up with pride that the ambassador should come to him from another country, even from Babylon, the famous Babylon. And two, this place was so famous. It was just so famous. And three, so great a prince as the king of Babylon was concerned about him and wanted to have a friendship with him. Hezekiah got flattered and then deceived. Bear that in mind. Flattery will lead to an improper self-assurance, pride. It always happens unless you realize it and you push it away. Mentally you do this, not physically, mentally you do it. So anyway, Isaiah continued questioning him, well, what have they seen in thine house? This is what we call leading question, coming nearer to the point that he had in mind, which was the aspect of this that was displeasing to the Lord. The Lord did not want Isaiah to open up everything to these guys. And he should not have received them in the way that he did. He should not have shown them everything. Hezekiah was being very honest and open about this. You know, he wasn't lying, but he had fallen victim to this pride. He wasn't trying to be deceitful. He wasn't trying to hide it. But he's starting to realize now, oh man, I should have never done this. You know, whoops. Whoops on me. He hadn't really, he just didn't expect a rebuke from the prophet, or the prophet would blame him, because he said, all that is in my house they have seen, the several royal apartments, the furniture. And he said, there's nothing among my treasures that they have not seen, which were more secret. He had things in cabinets that were under lock and key, and the gold and the silver, the jewels, the precious stones, the spices and the anointments. I can just see Isaiah going, uh-oh. The next thing that Isaiah says to him is the first time in the long chronology through the Bible that the Babylonian invasion is prophesied. This is the first time it's prophesied. And then said Isaiah, verses 5 through 8, to Hezekiah, hear the word of Jehovah of hosts. Behold, the days are coming when all that is in thy house and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith Jehovah. And all thy sons that shall issue from thee, whom thou shalt beget, shall be taken away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Then said Hezekiah unto Isaiah, good is the word of Jehovah which thou hast spoken. He said, moreover, for there shall be peace and truth in my days. In other words, what God is saying is there will be an invasion where the Babylonians are going to come, and they're going to take away your young men, and they're going to turn them into eunuchs, which is castrating them so that they will not be able to procreate, because they put some of them into harems and other places to do management responsibilities there. And they didn't want them impregnating the women in the harem. This was a common practice back then. Now, the Babylonians knew the extent of the riches. They went back to Babylon, and that became common knowledge. What is in Jerusalem? They passed that down to the next generation of kings. Everybody knew it in Babylon now. It's common knowledge. And it's interesting, you know, the statement from God that says, thy sons that shall issue from thee, whom thou shalt beget, shall they take away, and they shall become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. That was the practice of the Babylonians. They would conquer a nation. They would take the cream of the crop of the young men, bring them back to Babylon, turn them into eunuchs, and train them in the ways of the Babylonians. The evidence that we have for this, besides secular history, is the three friends of Daniel when he got carted away in 605 BC. They were made eunuchs. Daniel 1, verses 6 to 7 says, "Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the prince of the eunuchs gave names unto them. Unto Daniel he gave the name of Belteshazzar, unto Hananiah, Shadrach, unto Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego." So the second invasion of Israel, there's three of them, by the Babylonians. They took away the prophet Ezekiel and many, many others. God allowed this to happen to correct the Jews from their attitude. They had turned away from him. They had gotten exceedingly sinful. And we can see this in the scriptural text in a number of places. Godlessness leads to violence. Violence leads to God correcting that. It always goes in that manner. If you look at the first six chapters of Genesis, you start to see that the entire world was embraced in violence and godlessness. And violence and godlessness. So God floods the world. The next time he's going to destroy most of it with a fire in the tribulation, because the violence increases and the godlessness increases. The 20th century has been the most violent century of all of any centuries. We had two world wars, the Korean War, the Vietnam War. We've had genocides on a massive industrial scale in Nazi Germany, in Turkey, the Armenians, in Soviet Russia. It's what happened in the last century. You know, we grew up there, so you don't think like that. But you start comparing it to other centuries, and the violence just increases. And the pressure for godless governments, atheistic governments like the communists, have taken over many, many areas in this world. And they're trying as hard as they can to take over this country. Godlessness leads to violence, which leads to God's correction. It always happens that way. The Babylonians had risen up. Now, this is after the events here, but the events that God was telling Hezekiah through Isaiah were coming. Babylonia had chased the Assyrians out of their capital, Nineveh, and that was in 612 BC. Now, this is going to get a little complex, but you can read these things later. They fled to a town called Haran, which is where Abraham was from, and then finally to Carchemish in 609 BC. The Battle of Carchemish is one of the most famous battles in all of history. Pharaoh Necho of Egypt aligned himself with the Assyrians and marched up to meet the Babylonians. For some reason, the good King Josiah of Judah goes up there to battle too. And I still don't understand why. One of my Hebrew teachers was trying to explain to me, "Well, you got to read between the lines." I said, "I can't do that." I can see what's in the text, but why did he do that? Well, he goes up and gets in the battle and he gets killed. And so now they don't have a king in Judah. This is all happening up in Megiddo, where the campaign of Armageddon is going to start, and it's going to finish up near there. So Josiah is killed. The Israelis are defeated. Necho continues on here to Carchemish, and the Babylonians wipe out both the Assyrians and the Egyptians. Babylon becomes the prominent world empire, Gentile world empire. The Jews make Josiah's son, Jehoahaz, king. He only reigns for 3 months, though. It's all he lasts, because Necho comes back to Jerusalem on the way back to Egypt, and he deposes Jehoahaz. He gets a bunch of tribute money, of course. That's what they're looking for, 100 talents of silver and gold. And he sets up one named Eliakim as king. So Necho takes Jehoahaz, and he says, okay, I'm going to make this guy king, Eliakim. He also changed his name to Jehoiakim. He was a wicked, evil guy, Jehoiakim. And they take his brother, Jehoahaz, to Egypt. So this is part of the plan of these guys. They take the leaders captive. You know, there's no such thing as elections, and even the fights that happen for succession are massive. It's might, prowess, power, physical power that causes these guys to get in these positions. Immediately following this battle of Carchemish in 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, who's the victor, he comes straight down to Jerusalem. And he takes Daniel and his friends captive. He subjugates the city. And Jehoiakim gets fettered and carried away. In other words, he's tied up. Fettering is a tying up with leather straps and so on. And he took away all these prime young men. We only know about four of them from the text, because that's part of the prophetic parts of the Bible. And the temple was plundered. So the Babylonians may have taken things from the temple that Hezekiah had left out. But we know that Hezekiah did hide a lot of stuff, because they're still finding some of this stuff that he had hidden. Jehoiakim submitted to Nebuchadnezzar for 3 years. And then he revolts. He can't stand this anymore. I'm my own man. You're not going to tell me what to do. And it was really the wrong thing to do, because the Babylonians by this time were extremely powerful. He goes to Egypt and he says, come on, you guys got to help me out here. It's never good to go to Egypt for help, ever. You see this throughout the scriptures. These crazy kings are going to Egypt or Assyria. Instead of trusting God and following God with the blessings that they had. So he is eventually taken prisoner to Babylon, but he's released and he dies in Jerusalem. Jeremiah the prophet just despised him, and he said he was so wicked, so wicked. So now there's a second siege. First siege, taking away Daniel and his friends. The second siege against Jerusalem is late in this Jehoiakim's reign. And he continued to resist, and he was trying to make that alliance with Egypt. Nebuchadnezzar has a belly full of it and says, I'm done. I'm going up there, and we're going to stop it this time. So in 598 BC, Jehoiakim has died. His son, Jehoiachin, is also called in the scriptures Jeconiah or Coniah. He sets him up as a vassal king. In other words, you're going to be king, Coniah, and you're going to do what I want. I'm going to stay connected to you through these emissaries and so on, and you're going to do what I want. Because if you don't, you've seen what's happened to other people. So he does this for a while. And at that second siege, that's when Ezekiel gets taken away to Babylon, and he stays there for the rest of his life. The Babylonian king is Jehoiachin's uncle, Mattaniah, finally gets set up as king. Nebuchadnezzar changes his name to Zedekiah, and he's another vassal king. because Jehoiachin's not cutting the mustard here. He's not doing what he should have done. So Nebuchadnezzar commands Zedekiah to obey me. You be obedient to me. But finally, there's a lot of pressure within the people and his own staff in Israel to become nationalistic. Forget about these ties to this country over there, Babylon. We're our own country. Make Israel great again, you know? And they're trying as hard as they can to convince him. So he says, well, okay. You know, and as soon as he turns away from Nebuchadnezzar, what does he do? He tries to make an alliance with Egypt. He's looking for help anywhere except God. Anywhere except God. So he rebels against Nebuchadnezzar, and that brings the third and final siege. It starts in 588, and Nebuchadnezzar lifted the siege briefly because Egypt attacked him, and he defeated them quickly. And so he resumes his attack on Jerusalem, and finally on July the 16th of 586 B.C., which is the fourth month of the 11th year of Zedekiah's reign as king, the Babylonians take over Jerusalem and sack it, kill 1 million people. It was terrible what they did. Just terrible. But it was because of their sin. Their sin, they did it. And the prophet Jeremiah had been telling them this. Don't do this. He couldn't get through to Zedekiah. Matter of fact, they put him in jail because he was not saying things that were pleasant to the king. I don't like that guy. He tells me things I don't want to hear. Really? He did it anyway. He did it anyway. Now, what Nebuchadnezzar does is Zedekiah tries to escape with a few of his soldiers. They tried to first go to Jericho, and then they went up to Riblah, which is where Nebuchadnezzar had his camp, his army camp. And what Nebuchadnezzar did was, first of all, he killed Zedekiah's sons. And the reason they did that is to prevent any heirs from rising up against him again. And then he blinded Zedekiah, took him back to Babylon, which is where he died. Now, in conclusion with this story, Hezekiah is listening to Isaiah telling him that these Babylonians are going to come in at a future time, and they're going to make your offspring eunuchs, and they're going to cart them away. They're going to destroy the city. They're going to take away all your treasures. And it's basically because you did this, you showed them these things. Now, the issue here is the pride that came into Hezekiah. But it's also a precursor to what was going to happen to that country because they turned away from God. Hezekiah was a good king. He didn't even realize the pride that was coming in at him until it was pointed out to him. This is the first time, again, these Babylonian invasions were prophesied. And he is very, very pleased that it's not going to happen during his reign. Let us pray.